Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 6 of the Faculty Room podcast. We hope that you had a wonderful holiday season. I am one half of your host, Mike Azzalina, and I'm joined by none other than
Matthew Rogers,
the famous Matt Rogers. How you doing, man?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Hanging in there. We got to catch up a little bit this weekend, celebrating my wife's birthday. It was great to see you.
Absolutely. See, the funny thing is that we have been doing the podcast, but not seeing each other. So this is my only time to get to talk to you. And I'm feeling a little deprived. This weekend made up for it. So all is right in the world.
Yeah, it was a good time. We had a really nice time and kind of gave a little bit of a break to the get back into gear for school, which I'm curious, Matt, real quickly, how has your get back into it been?
Terrible. I don't know what it is right now. It is a mild winter, if you would even call it winter. The kids are so confused. Are they supposed to be outside? Are they supposed to be in? They've got their winter jackets, but they have their spring energy. It is germ central at my classroom. It is everything all at one time. But otherwise, everyone's relatively rested and I guess ready to get kind of into that anxiety phase. That's what we get into, that high pressure time from here on into March and April, unfortunately.
Right, which is actually the most important time to maintain that classroom climate and community that you've started to build at the beginning of the year, which is perfect for what we are doing tonight. We are very excited tonight, Matt. Very excited.
How excited?
Very excited.
Oh, I know. So excited.
And she's getting really angry at us because we're building her up so much, and she's over here shaking her head at us right now. So honestly, for anybody who's listened, Matt and I absolutely love what we do. We're very passionate about education, and we're very passionate about creating relationships and being able to help our students do that. And that's, you know, that's one part of why we're so excited about tonight. And a second part, Matt, if I can indulge for a moment, is that the person that we're talking to tonight is not only someone that's respected in her field, but someone who's really important to me personally. It's my cousin, which makes this even more fun for me tonight. Right, Matt?
There we go. Cousin Beth.
Cousin Beth. So I'm going to just introduce my Beth, our guest tonight on the Faculty Room podcast. Beth is a restorative practice trainer, professor. Beth, I'm going to let you in a moment here talk exactly about what it is you do and why you got into what you're doing. But we really just want to take a second to welcome you and thank you for coming on.
Wait, hold on. Didn't you say she was an international trainer? Just saying.
Yeah, we'll let her say that. So Beth, thanks so much for coming on. And if you don't mind sharing what you do and why you love what you do.
Sure. So thank you both for having me on your podcast. I have been a listener, so I'm excited to now be a guest. I work for an organization that's actually a graduate school called the International Institute for Restorative Practices. And in my role there, I teach at our online graduate school, and I'm also an instructor. So I provide professional development opportunities worldwide. So I have made a few trips outside of the U.S. to do some training on behalf of the IIRP.
That makes you an international trainer, right?
It does. Yeah. It does.
All right, just making sure.
He's going to keep saying that just for all of you listening right now. That's not going away for the next 40 minutes.
I have to say, so Mike's helped out a little bit. And I think he went to the whopping state of Ohio and now claims
Michael has gone to Ohio.
Now claims
yes.
himself as
national trainer.
National leader in restorative practice. I'm just saying Beth has way more credentials to be saying that.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And she'll give me a hard time for it and beat me up about it at some point, I'm sure.
Oh, that's not true.
But so, Beth, talk to us a little bit about how you got into the International Institute, what brought you on board, why you're passionate about it, and even just a little explanation around what restorative practice is, because I'm not sure that everybody really has a full grasp of exactly what restorative practice entails.
Sure. So I like to think of my career as a series of happy accidents. I, like Matt, am a Millersville graduate.
That's so right. Marauder proud.
Yeah, so go Marauders. And I graduated with a degree in secondary education and social studies. And it was not a very good job market in 2000 for someone looking to get a secondary ed position. So I never made it formally to the classroom in that context. And I started working in Lancaster at the Boys and Girls Club of Lancaster County in Columbia, and was a school-based youth worker. So I was based at in the elementary schools in Columbia. Now, the Columbia School District is pretty small. So it consisted of, I don't know if it still does, it's been a while, two elementary schools and then a middle and high school. So I worked in the two elementary schools and was a support person for the guidance counselor and pushed into a lot of classrooms and ran a lot of groups. And that was something that I was really connecting with. So it was an opportunity for me to use my education degree, but just use it a little bit different. And that was the first time that I really started to work with students in a different way that was outside of the classroom. And I could really start to focus on what does it mean to build these connections with these kids, but also with their parents. So working at the Boys and Girls Club in the evening, we had a lot of opportunity to connect with parents and to see what's going on for kids outside of just that school day. So so that was really great for me to be able to see a bigger picture, to see what happened before and, you know, before 8 o'clock and after 3 o'clock. So from there, I had a lot of friends that I also went to Millersville with who worked at an organization in Bucks County called Community Service Foundation. And the CSF Bucksmont serves a wide variety of needs in southeastern Pennsylvania. So currently they have five private academic high schools that serve juvenile probation, children and youth, as well as neighboring school districts. They have a foster care program and a drug and alcohol outpatient program. So at that point, I switched my focus to drug and alcohol counseling. And one of the things, again, that I was most drawn to in that position was to be able to connect with and create relationships with kids outside of that school day. So much is going on beyond just, you know, what we're getting a glimpse of, you know, from that eight to three. And I was drawn to Community Service Foundation because they used restorative practices and they focused their education programs, their foster care programs, their community-based programs, all through this lens of, in shorthand, we would say working with people. And the fundamental hypothesis of restorative practices is that people are happier, more cooperative, more productive, and more willing to make positive changes in their lives when people in positions of authority, and I would even say influence, do things with them rather than to them or for them. So it's about accountability and support. And for me, it's about how are we creating relationships. Ultimately, restorative practices is the science of relationships. And we need food, we need shelter, we need to have our basic needs met. And one of those basic needs is creating bonds. And one of the things that is, you know, can be kind of difficult is that also includes creating bonds with the kids that it's not always easy for us to connect with.
Perfect. Whoa. Love that. And that's honestly, I think the direction that most of us implicitly go. So I'm going to go ahead and just ask this right away. When we're practicing in this restorative philosophy, how important is it for us to be explicit in that nature, making students aware of that relationship building?
I think, yeah, that really is key. Oftentimes when I train a group of teachers or if I'm teaching an online course, one of the most common things that I hear is, yeah, I do this anyway. I'm good at building relationships. This is what I do. And one of the things we really focus on is how do you do it on purpose and how do you do it every day? So again, it's, you know, we have, and you know, I can give you some links to our website. We have what we would call the social discipline window. And that really talks about having really high expectations and holding people accountable and at the same time being nurturing and supportive. So matching that. So that is what would land us, again, like I would say, in the with box. I think one of our misconceptions around restorative practices is that it's just how you respond to harm, or it's what you do when things go wrong. And we have an entire continuum where we talk about the proactive, and we talk about the 80% of your interactions with kids, parents, colleagues, community members that precedes harm. So it's about building social capital in a way that, again, is really putting a focus on the idea of belonging and connection and strengthening human bonds, strengthening civil society.
So I want to go back to the social discipline window, because as someone who's been exposed to this restorative piece, and Matt, you'll appreciate this, this is one of the most reflective parts of restorative practice for anybody who practices any sort of relationship building. I mean, this isn't just in a school. It can be in your everyday relationships, the way that you reflect upon, you know, your communication and your relationships with others. And I just want to touch on that real quickly, Beth. So for those people listening, if you take, if you have a pen and a paper near you and just draw a bigger square and then split that into four boxes, I'm going to let Beth kind of walk you through the rest, because I just think this is like really really powerful as a reflection. So, you know, just kind of envision that model in your brain. And Beth, if you could talk to us about each of the four boxes and the type of, you know, instructor you might see in the classroom, and where you really want to try and find yourself as a teacher.
Sure. So, this is kind of tough to do in a way where people aren't actually looking at it. So I am going to say, if you are in a computer listening to this, you could go to www.iirp.edu, and under restorative practices, there's a link that says what is restorative practices. If you click on that, and there's an article called Defining Restorative. If you click the online version and you go down to social discipline window, the supporting framework, there's actually a graphic. So it may just be a little bit easier if you are able to take a look at a computer. And, you know, one of the things we also talk about in training and we talk about in classes is, you know, we want people to think about who were the people in their lives that they were most impacted by and that they were influenced by in their throughout their lifespan. It doesn't even necessarily have to be a classroom teacher. And what we find time and time again is that it's the people in their lives that had expectations of them, that had set the bar high for them, and at the same time gave them the support that they needed in order to reach that. So this can be with yourself. You know, how are you restorative with yourself? We would say the with box. So being with is a balance of expectation and support. We would call our, just if you're just giving expectations and control and discipline and not giving support to reach that, we would call that the punitive box or the two box. The opposite to that is lots and lots of support and nurturing and caring, but not a whole lot of expectation. We would call that the four box, or being permissive. And then the final quadrant is what we would call the not box, and that's just what it sounds like. It's doing neither. It's not offering support or giving expectation. So that with box is really the sweet spot, and it's about, again, how are we entering a relationship with ourselves? Do we hold ourselves accountable, but also give ourselves support in order to reach the goals we set for ourselves? You know, I've worked with a lot of administrators over the years who will say, it's so hard for me to get any work done because I have an open door policy. So, you know, anyone, you know, I'm always on call. And I've asked them to reflect on that and say, so where's the boundary with that? If you're always on call, where's the boundary for you to actually get your work done? So again, it's that lots and lots of support, but not offering a boundary. So they end up in the permissive box. When we're talking about, you know, interpersonal relationships, and whether it's the personal relationships we have at home or with colleagues, again, how do we support one another? But how do we also hold each other accountable to things? So in a classroom, same thing. It can be about behavior, or it could be about teaching and learning. You know, you have a test, you're teaching a lesson, there's norms in your classroom. the proactive piece is, how do we arrive at some of these norms? How do we arrive at the classroom rituals collectively? And how do we do that together in a community? And I know you had someone on one of your earlier shows that he started with an empty classroom. I mean, that for me is a great example of how do you collaboratively work together, students, parents, teacher, to build this together. There's expectations there, without a doubt, but there's also the support and the trust for people to be able to meet those expectations.
That's perfect. And I want to quick ask you a question about, you know, we talk constantly about teachers that we've had because you and I have shared teachers. Yeah. So can you give an example of a teacher that you've had that's closest? And you've said this to me, it's really hard to live in the with box. But can you share an example of a teacher who was in that box and how you saw them to be in that box, how they were that with educator that we all want to try and be?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and I think a lot of us are in the with box. I think it's, again, just being cognizant of what it is that we're doing and how we're doing it. But, and you've probably talked about, you know, our eighth grade teacher at Easton Catholic, Mr. Hammerstone, was definitely one of those teachers. You knew what the expectations were when you went into the classroom. And you also knew you were going to be supported. I was a very good student, but science was not my thing. And one of the stories I tell often is that he knew that I could do better than I was doing, and he wasn't okay to just say, all right, well, the C is the best she can do. So he stayed after school with me, and we went through everything. And it's not that I really wanted to be there, but he cared enough. So there was two things, right? There was the personal relationship and connection, and I wanted to do well. And he also saw potential in me that I didn't always see in myself. So for him, it was about consistency and not letting me off the hook. And I think that's a really good example of the with box. And again, it's easy with students. I mean, your listeners are probably thinking, I do this. I have great relationships with my students. And that's the easy part. It's building the relationships with the students that are tougher to love, that are tougher to connect with. That's what I mean by every day on purpose. You know, that student in the back of the classroom, the one who's maybe coming in late, the one who's got his head down. That's the one who needs the connection, who needs the social bonds, probably more than the ones that are, you know, that those relationships come more naturally too.
I think that kind of touches directly into the kind of, I don't want to say mantra, but the thing you hear very classically as, man, this kid was a real challenge, but I loved him or her the most at the end of the year. I think that's what kind of grows as, yeah, they really challenged me throughout this school year, but wow, my effort towards him or her was worth every moment of effort.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'll put it this way, right? Like our podcast, the whole goal, we say it over and over, it's about new teachers coming into the classroom and how they feel comfortable. And I think we do that on purpose because we don't have a lot of new teachers actually listening to the podcast. And I don't want to like blow anyone's cover, but realistically, we have a lot of our friends and colleagues that listen to this podcast. And we kind of hide under the blanket of, hey, we're giving these strategies to people that don't know, when reality, what we try to cover is just good teaching practice, right? Like everything we're covering can apply if you are 3 years in a classroom, 13 or 30. That's our whole goal of this. And so long intro to kind of go and say, I'm a brand new teacher, or I'm a novice teacher, or I'm an uncomfortable teacher, or I know how to do curriculum, but I don't necessarily know how to bring that to my classroom. How would you suggest, because I feel like not having answers early on in my career, that you only navigate that by experience. So how do you jump on that? Because we all have those kids that if I had that kid 5 years into my career, his trajectory was totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you kind of say is, since you kind of see it on the far end, or you're trying to avoid that, what would you say is kind of guidelines to get started?
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it's what's your approach to education, right? You know, Michael, you had asked about examples of the boxes. You know, I've been out of school for a little while, but there was still that mentality of don't smile till Christmas from some folks. And that's absolutely the punitive box, the two box. Do as I say because I say. And then the opposite trap of that is I just want to be their friend. And then we're going to connect and we're going to have a great relationship. And there's no accountability. So for me, it's what's the happy medium between both of those things. So it's not to be afraid to be vulnerable. I think that that's important. And not giving everything so that it becomes a personal relationship and not a professional relationship. I think one of the things that I would say early on, is to just spend some time in the beginning of your year getting to know people and getting to know people on an age appropriate level, getting to know your colleagues. Like, how do you support one another as a faculty? I think you said it, you know, one of your earlier podcasts about the faculty room can be one of those toxic places, where all we do is go in there and complain and, you know, say things about, you know, students and their parents. And I would love to change that. You know, how does the faculty room become a place where teachers can support one another, a place where they can learn and they can build their own community? Because in order for us to really build connections with kids, I think it's important for us to build connections with our colleagues. I would say compassion, I think, is a word that sometimes gets a little bit overused. But because I have a counseling background as well, I've gotten into the habit, and I've tried really hard when I was supervising other counselors or pushing in and coaching in schools, especially when the negativity really starts to happen. I would challenge people to say, would you say the same thing if the parent just walked in the door? Would you write that email if you know that the student's brother or uncle or grandparent was reading the email? So how do we try to be a little bit more transparent and have some compassion? Yes, I know things get really frustrating and it gets really hard, and we need an opportunity to vent and to get rid of that negative emotion and that negative affect. But how do we build up the positive? You know, how do we catch people doing things right and really starting to create that community? So the first step is always what we would say is a circle. It's not new. It's been around since fire, since man created fire. We gathered around a circle, you know, to build our community, to create our social bonds. These are practices that go back to our indigenous communities in the United States, in North America, New Zealand, and Australia. Start that campfire in your classroom. Start that campfire in the faculty room. And we're not just going to sit around the campfire and sing songs and pretend, you know, everything's great. That's not what this is about either. But it's first and foremost, get to know one another. Look each other in the eye. Listen. Spend a little bit of extra time talking to that student who maybe drives you crazy. I'm going back to the earlier podcast that you had where the Facebook page and, you know, really getting the parents involved. And I was just at a school this past week in California and had lunch or dinner with a colleague who's working in it's a 4-8 cyber school situation, basically. They have 100% parent attendance at back to school night. So how does that happen, right? How does it happen that these are kids who aren't making it in a mainstream classroom, they're coming, they're doing cyber school, and they get every parent there? It's because of how they're engaging the parents. It's how they're engaging the kids. It's reaching out to them. It's having compassion. It's listening. It's having the courage to raise really tough issues when they arise. And it's valuing the diversity of your community and of the people that are walking through your doors.
So you mentioned, you know, that proactivity and the circles and, you know, doing those to kind of build the relationship. So kind of a two-parter. If you can give some other examples of ways that you can maximize that positive that you're talking about and to be proactive, and then how that will help you down the line when you do have to like repair any sort of harm that's happened within the community. Because I think sometimes, you know, as educators, you know, we tend to be more reactive. But what are some ways we can be proactive to help build that community, so kids are really seeing, when damage is done, the impact that it's having and how they can help to fix it?
Yeah. I mean, I would suggest, you know, when you're starting your new year, and even at this point, I mean, you know, you've just been away for the last, you know, couple weeks, you know, back at it again. I think there's a lot of small impromptu conversations that you can have with students early on. So, you know, in those early couple weeks, how can you have some individualized conversations with each student? That's going to get a lot harder in a middle school and in a high school when you're having 100 and 100 plus kids coming through each day, right? So you're focusing on a different class than maybe each week, but how can you, within September, or now that we're back starting over again, find out something, one thing individual about, you know, each of your students? Maybe it's what the music they listen to. What's the common ground? And that can be done, sure, by circles, but it can also be done by just playing some games, you know, having an opportunity to just, not only for you as the adult in the room to get to know one another, because I've had teachers say that to me, you know, Beth, I'm great with building relationships with my students. I don't need to move my classroom into a circle. And absolutely, they have great relationships, but it's not just you and the students. It's the students with one another as well. So when you are playing community building games or you're, you know, just teaching a lesson a little bit differently, you know, as a way to engage not only the academic piece, but the social and emotional piece, you're giving your students an opportunity to create bonds with one another as well, which I believe is just as important as the adult creating the bonds. You have a new student coming in, right? That's always a really tough time. It's October, brand new kid coming into the classroom. Welcome them. Spend 2 minutes to stand up and have every student introduce themselves and offer a piece of advice to them, or one tip about being in this school. We do that at our office when we have new staff start. And sometimes it's the tip or the advice is, this is who you talk to if you have questions about your payroll. And sometimes it's, there's a great coffee shop down the street. So at 2 o'clock when you need that extra caffeine boost. So those are the very minor things that you can do to not only start to build connection one-on-one, but also create that connection amongst the community.
I think you bring up the circle. I think I mentioned it before, but I want to say with this conversation and what we're going for is the value of the little things first thing in the morning. So homeroom is never a productive time. The kids have just come off the bus. Some of them are coming out of like the lunchroom, having breakfast. They're running down the halls, excited more to see their friends than to see you. But every morning, certain things like meeting your kid at the door to give them a handshake and teaching them how to handshake. I know I said that in the first episode, but I can tell immediately who is set up for a good day, who is not. So they come in, we've done the handshake, I do my good morning snippet, like 3 seconds worth of conversation, but that's with every single student. And then I kind of hover around my kids as they unpack and they go through their morning routine and they start on their morning math or morning work. And then I pull kids because, hey, obviously something happened, you need to dig in a little further. And then announcements come on, we say the pledge, and then we have 10 minutes before we go to special and we get in a circle. And I think what you're mentioning is perfect. Every kid can see every other kid's face. That's a huge portion of it. There is no hiding. Hey, if you don't want to share, that's fine. But we talk about one positive, right? Because we'll hear some kids 1,000 positives and they'll hide anything negative. And then some people are going to struggle to want to say anything, but they only have to accomplish one. And then we say one thing that could be better. That's how we phrase it. Something that could be better. Not a negative, not something that's wrong, not something you're embarrassed about, something that could be better. And I'll say that I've only really stuck to doing it this year. And I feel like in the first 15 minutes of school, I can acknowledge how the day's going to go. And I can either be passive and let it be, or we can attack it and address it right then. And I think that has been a huge factor. And I'm not trying to give myself a pat on the back, but that's something from talking with Mike and having interactions with you that, again, all this is proactive instead of reactive. And there's so much reactive, and it's so much scar tissue once you get into the reactive phase.
And I would even challenge the term reactive, because when you think about reactive, you know, with the connotation of that word, it's like a quick judgment, right? We talk about proactive and responsive, because even when you are reacting, we want to change the connotation of that to a response, to a thoughtful response, and move away from some of those gut instincts. I mean, when you talk about, I think, Matt, you said, you know, that if I could go back to those first kids in the first 5 years of my career, the same with me. And it's the mistakes I made were thinking or were acting without thinking first, and were being reactive and not being responsive, and not taking a deep breath and slowing things down and moving, you know, moving through a process. So, I mean, we talk about check-ins and check-outs, and it's different than in PBIS, but how do you check in as a class? Matt, you just gave an example of that, right? So that question can change every day. I've worked with some science teachers, you know, who will do a weather report, but your personal check-in weather report. So, well, today I'm 72 and sunny, so I know it's going to be an easy day, right?
That's awesome.
Or, yeah. You know, cloudy with a chance of rain. All right, maybe I'm going to talk to that student a little bit before the classes change or before we move into move into something else. And, you know, I always say sometimes some of the science teachers I've worked with have been some of the most creative and really getting into the heart of things. Because restorative practices is also teaching and learning. So how do we, again, take our academics and then take it to a little bit of a deeper level? I worked with a freshman class several years ago in a local school district, and the teacher was working on a unit about the weather, and each kid had to take a natural disaster and do the report on it. So we had tsunamis and earthquakes and hurricanes, and they shared in a group project their findings on whatever on their report. And one of the pieces of the assignment was talk about the community where that happened, and how was the community impacted. So I'll never forget the student who said, I had Hurricane Katrina, and one thing I learned was that when you had to go to the Superdome for the shelter, you couldn't take your pets. And I can't imagine if I had to leave my dog. And it just took, you know, this is a kid 2,000 miles away from where this happened to now start to have some empathy and start to relate. And they learned all that they needed to learn as far as the weather patterns and what makes a hurricane. But it's that one question that can take it just a little bit deeper to really focus on relationships, community, not even my community, but how do I look outside of my community to what's happening other places and have empathy and have compassion. So this isn't, again, just what the adult is doing, but how is the adult transferring this to the student at any grade level? Because a kindergartner is going to be able to understand that the same way that a senior in high school will.
Yeah, that's really, that right there, that part right there is really impactful. And a lot of what, you know, what I find restorative bringing to the table every day, you know, at our school. And I say this often when, you know, that you made a great point about reactive. And one of your colleagues who kind of walked me through this, Sharon Mass, she once said to me, you know, how often when you were teaching, did you see a kid's head down on the desk and start telling yourself the story that his head's down on his desk, he's not engaged, he's being disrespectful, get out of my classroom. it's all so quick and reactive versus, okay, let me, instead of telling myself that story and going to that part of my brain, you know, did he eat? It's about asking the right questions and having the right conversations. with that student then. And that's exactly what, because we're now showing empathy and modeling that empathy as the adult and allowing them then to maybe take that empathy and use it elsewhere. So when you are doing that with the most difficult kids, Beth, and you are giving the opportunity for them to sit in that circle or have those opportunities to connect with one another on that positive affect that you had talked about, what kind of social capital does that gain you down the road when problems do arise?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it's all about. It's time on the front end. So if I'm talking about, you know, starting to be more deliberate around being restorative in my setting, in my classroom, and whatever that setting is, administrators out there with my staff, it's a lot of front loading, but you're going to gain miles in the long run. You know, kids are going to be leaders for you. Kids, parents, you know, are going to not just see your number coming up and not want to answer it because they trust you, because you've spent some time on the front end getting to know them, getting to know their family. Now, I mean, I've been fortunate over my career. I spent a lot of time working with kids and parents in the community, in their homes. If anyone has the ability in their districts to do a home visit, that's another thing that will get you miles, you know, to be able to sit in a parent in a student's household and say, who are the people in this picture? You know, who are these people? Who do you hang out with on the weekends? Who are the family members that really make a difference or that really matter to you? And it's really, again, just about opening up some space. It does take a lot of time. But, you know, I equate it a lot of times to, you know, there's a million and one diets out there for people to lose weight. You know, the no carbs, no fat, you name it, right? There's a diet for everyone. But when it comes down to it, the best way to live a healthy lifestyle is diet and exercise. You know, the best way to build relationships and build connections is sometimes it's not a magic wand. It's just get to know people. Listen to people. Don't make assumptions. Don't just jump in, like you said, Michael, about the heads down, so they obviously are being disrespectful and I want them out of my classroom. You know, ask what's happening. I think that's another thing I would say to the first year Beth, you know, going into a classroom. Don't ask why in the context of student behavior, because you're never going to get an answer that's going to satisfy you, and most likely there isn't an answer. Ask what happened. Open up a different space and start a different conversation.
Yeah, and you know, you guys have that great list of questions, and I know the one that I always find to be most impactful when I have the situations with two students or multiple students is the question of, you know, who did that impact? When I ask, you know, the quote unquote offender in the incident, who did that impact? And they really sit and they think about it. And, you know, you might get a laundry list of people of that. Now they're realizing, well, I impacted him because he's the person that I argued with, or I got into the fight with. Well, and then I'm impacting my teacher because she was there to see it. And now I'm impacting you, Mr. A, because you're here with me instead of, you know, working with a teacher or a younger student. And I'm going to impact my mom because you're going to call her later and she's not going to be happy with me. And so it's really interesting when they start to reflect upon and they want to make that right. And I love that about, you know, the questions that you guys have laid out for those situations, helping them see that their community actually expands. And it's not just about that one moment and that one person, but it expands to a broader arena. And I love that about it. I do have a couple more questions for you, Beth, before we wrap up tonight. One of them being, you mentioned, you know, PBIS earlier. And, you know, a lot of times when we talk about, when we actually specifically, you know, rolling the restorative out and just giving that presence to what we're trying to do at a school, oftentimes we'll hear, this is just another thing. It'll come and go. Why are we adding this? So can you talk a little bit to that and kind of explain how restorative fits into the puzzle of the ever-evolving educational world?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's exciting about restorative practices and the work that IARP is doing, but the work that's happening worldwide, again, we didn't invent this. This is stuff that, you know, has been happening for hundreds and thousands of years. And there's a lot of great resources out there as far as implementation and implementing in schools. And we just wrapped up a study with the RAND Corporation, I think it's our second now randomized control studies, that's, you know, really taking a deeper dive into how is this impacting safety? How is this impacting climate and relationship? And the reason I don't think it is just another flash in the pan is because I believe it's the lens in which we do everything through. So how do we first and foremost build connection and build relationship and be explicit and be and do that on purpose? How do we explicitly build community in our classrooms, in our schools, in our counseling rooms, in our cafeterias, you know, wherever it is? And, you know, PBI, I went to one of my first PBIS trainings about a year ago. And I think it is long, for me, the most important part of that was what we're talking about, which is the relationship. You know, it's less about the lollipop, right, or the star or the ticket, and more about the connection that you have and spending time. I mean, I love the pizza party reward, you know, at the end of the class, but it's more about the building of community at the party than the pizza. So I think it's, again, it's, for me, it's what's the lens in which we're doing everything, right? Am I setting expectations, and am I offering the support that people need in order to get there?
It's beautiful. Cause we, you know, the description that I usually give in that scenario is, you know, and you kind of helped me form this idea that it's the plate in which we lay everything on top of, you know, base everything that you're going to do in restorative, because if you build those relationships and you are explicit about that, then when you do the PBIS lessons, the kids are focused around that because they know that those things of being responsible, respectful, and safe impact their community in a positive way.
So it's
just something that I wanted to make sure I asked. And I think the one, the last piece that I have that I always think, you know, one of the largest myths, and you and I talk about this all the time, is that restorative is kumbaya. It is, you know, we're going to get together, we're going to sing songs, everything's going to be okay. There's not going to be accountability when things go wrong. When a kid does harm their community, they're going to have a talking to, and then that's all. They get to come back and do whatever it is. So, you know, can you just talk to the restorative approach on that and, you know, why that is considered a myth in your practice and your philosophy?
Sure. And I think that, you know, we talk about 80% of proactive. There is the 20% of responsive. Things go wrong. Harm happens, and that needs to be dealt with, and people do need to be accountable. I think that people get the wrong idea about restorative practices, and they do think we're just going to sit in a circle and talk about our feelings. And then the headline becomes progressive discipline makes schools less safe. And when you're not following it through, it does make schools less safe. If you're removing suspensions or expulsions and not replacing it with anything, it is going to feel unsafe and out of control. So the responsive piece is, you know, I would never work with a school and say you can never suspend again. I would suggest in-school suspension, but it's more about how do you bring that student back. So a student throws a desk in a classroom or gets into a fight in a classroom and made that place, the classroom, unsafe and needed to be removed. Our traditional system just plops them right back in as if nothing ever happened. In a restorative system, there's an opportunity for reintegration. There's an opportunity to be reconnected. And the questions that you talked about, Michael, the what happened, what were you thinking at the time, who's been affected, how have they been affected, and what needs to happen in order to make things right. Restorative practices isn't a prescription pad. So what needs to happen in order to make things right may be different from one student to the next student to the next student. But students are going to have more voice and choice in exchange for responsibility and accountability. And I would never decrease accountability or expectations when implementing restorative practices. It's more about increasing support for people to be able to meet those expectations and to continue to have compassion. Another story, I've shared this with you a bunch of times. I work with a colleague and I would consider a friend in a school in Los Angeles, and he's the principal, and he will not take a discipline referral from a teacher without two positive qualities about the student on the referral. Because, yeah, we're here to deal with the negative, and we're here to deal with things that go wrong. But when he sits down with that student and says, before we get into what happened, let me tell you the two things that your teacher thinks about you that are positive. We can't lose sight that there's good in all of us. And the times when it's hardest for us to see that is when we need to articulate it the most. So kids are held accountable. Suspensions still happen. Detentions still happen. How do we integrate people back? How do we bring them back into the fold? That's the question I think we answer.
I think I heard something recently, and it just stuck with me. The concept of bullying being a verb and not a noun. I think that concept of if I label a kid as, in this scenario, no good will ever come from that. I'm never going to reestablish a connection if I always am willing to look at that kid and give that preemptive expectation. Oh, you must have been involved. There is no good coming from that relationship. You're only devaluing and making it even further, because guess what? At some point, that kid is going to be part of our society, and whether they have challenges at home and it's an outcry for help, but you're too frustrated on a Thursday morning, too tired and just looking forward to the weekend, because that happens, right? Like, that's a reality. We have lives and things build up on us too, but that's where every day it matters. There's a guy, Joe Sanfilippo, who's a superintendent out in the Midwest area, and his big tagline is, every kid, every day. Now, he's going to struggle with that in person every day because it's for a superintendent, but he figures out a way digitally to be accessible to kids, show his face in some way every single day. And that's the same thing with the community. I totally agree. I think the one thing that I want to kind of cover before we let you go is, so I had a different perspective of restorative practice. I don't know where my, I guess, self-created definition came from. And I think that, so first off, thanks for coming on, because now I feel clarified. But...
you're welcome.
The one thing that I kind of want to highlight before you go is the concept of how do you feel in your position you make an impact in the classroom today? Because I know that as we get further away, I know Mike and I have positions where we're in connection with the students, and I know that's the root of our inspiration. And I want to talk to my buddy Ryan, who took a step away from kids a little bit. So I want to kind of ask again, we get into this because we want to make a difference. We have a love of kids. So what is your connection to the classroom, and how do you feel like you make an impact every day? Because I think we do want to encourage other outlets other than just being a classroom teacher, because it's still rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, I've been out of direct service for a while, and I still, you know, occasionally am in schools and do some coaching, because, again, the IIRP is connected with a nonprofit called Community Service Foundation and Bucksmont Academy, so whenever I can still, you know, get into the schools, I do. But for me, when I have a room full of 45 skeptical adults, and after 4 days, if they're able to, you know, give 4 days of our training, and we start day one, you walk in and there's a circle and there's no desks and they're freaked out, and I make the joke that there's no back row in a circle, and It never fails how a community can be built in 2 days or in 4 days with a group of adults. So I'm still in the classroom. My students are different. They're older and they know a lot. And they teach me, and I like to think that I teach them. And if a training of 40 people, those teachers and administrators and counselors and social workers can go home and talk to their own family a little bit differently or engage with a student or a parent even a little bit differently, I think in my role now, this is the best way for me to affect change. I play a pretty big role at our organization of writing our curriculum. And we have about 2,000 licensed trainers. So I'm affecting change there. What I'm putting forward, what I'm writing, what our organization is proposing is getting into the hands of a lot of different educators. And even if, again, one person I encounter talks to someone, has a different connection, engages with parents slightly different after my interaction with them. For me, that's how I affect change on a larger scale.
Wow. Cousin Beth.
Cousin Beth, showing up.
Cousin Michael and Matt.
What was my title? I missed that.
I just said Matt. Matt. Cousin by proxy, Matt.
There you go.
Well, we can't thank you enough for coming on tonight. It was awesome hearing about it straight from the horse's mouth. In every way, how, you know, creating relationships is such a key. Before you go, we definitely want to get contact information from you for our listeners. And one thing that I actually said to Matt in our little chat box, and if you're okay with it, and if IRP would be okay with it, when we post this, would we be able to put a picture of the discipline window so people can reference it?
You can. Well, it's on our website. So, okay. Yes, you can link right to the article that I mentioned.
Yeah. Okay.
And I can send that to you.
Sure.
There's also, so I would say first and foremost, go to our website, iirp.edu. There is a ton of information on there, a lot of resources that you can get for free. If you scroll down even to the very bottom of our webpage on the right-hand corner, there's a little guide to getting started with circles. You can click on that. It's a four-page guide. There's articles. We have a library. So there's a lot of great things that you can connect with on our website. We have a conference every year. Our conference this year is going to be in Bethlehem, so it'll be local. Fairly local. And it's just an amazing opportunity of practitioners from all around the world, educators getting together. My Twitter is Beth Smull, SMULL, _IIRP. I can send you the link to the article as well as my Twitter. So don't hesitate to reach out if you have questions or are interested in training or graduate education for Pennsylvania teachers who need Act 48 credits. We are an outlet, so you have an opportunity to learn about restorative practices and building communities in your classrooms.
Great.
From the international trainer herself.
From the international trainer
That's
herself.
Right.
Yes.
Not from the national trainer.
Yeah.
Trainer.
Well, I'm turning all shades of red that I know your listeners can't see.
It's a wonderful thing.
But.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Beth, and we really appreciate you coming on. And your knowledge is incredibly important to the work that we do as educators. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Cousin Beth.
You're welcome.
We'll talk with you soon.
All right, sounds good. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you for real? Beth Smull, international trader. She was amazing.
I mean, I'm biased, so she's gonna kill me because she felt like she's used to talking right in front of people. And she said to Matt and I when she was done, it felt very awkward not talking in front of people. And then we joked, she's a Zoom person. We do these on Google Hangout, the real deal. And she was like, if we would have been on Zoom, we would have been fine. But in all seriousness, she's an expert in restorative practice. And it's guys, it's what we do. It's what we do. It's just about making sure we're doing it with purpose is the message that we want to come away with tonight. Do it with purpose. Make sure the kids know the purpose behind it, you know?
I think, yeah. I mean, we've talked about before that, hey, we kind of seesaw back and forth. I'm really mean to my kids because I don't want them to take advantage of me. That doesn't work. They don't respect me and they don't listen. So then I become very friendly. This is very common. Hey, I care so much about these kids, but A, we're either inappropriate of like, hey, you're an instructor, you're a facilitator, you're a teacher, but right now you're just trying to be like a 9-year-old kid in trying to assimilate like them. And it does take time to find that common ground, that middle kind of width box is just a perfect, I've never heard it that way, and it is a perfect way of, hey, I'm along your side for this journey. I'm going to support you, but I'm not going to give it to you.
Yeah, I'm going to hold that expectation really high, but I'm going to support you all the way to that expectation. I often think of, if you've ever seen, and it's one of my favorite movies with one of my favorite actors, but Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams, and the scene where student doesn't do his homework. It's the expectation. You're supposed to write a poem, and he doesn't write the poem, and Robin Williams walks him through it right in front of the entire class. It's the most with you can be as a teacher. It's Hollywood with. And, you know, earlier we were talking about that social discipline window, and Beth told us that we can link the article right there for you, so you don't have to try and find it. Thank goodness, because
that's right.
it would have been really difficult to try and locate that, but we're going to give you the link so you can see exactly what she's talking about, because it's a really reflective piece. And we were very appreciative to have her on. She's very busy and travels quite a bit doing this. So having the opportunity to sit down and talk with her was very beneficial. So we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
Absolutely. So jumping in a little bit, I know Mike started off by saying we've hit a new year. Mm-hmm. All of the bad dad jokes that I've broken, oh, I haven't seen you since last year, have come and gone at this point. But as it hits January, gosh, today is January 7th, but it really is, I'll say, the last few uphill climbs before it turns to the end of the year. So January and February become challenging, mm-hmm. really challenging. The weather's not great, indoor recess, the kids aren't running around, even with a mild winter. So we're gearing up, but March, April becomes the focus. And I know it's inevitable. It's one of those things that we can't avoid. So it's kind of time to buckle down and get focused.
Yep. Get focused, but don't forget to keep that community strong in there. Give those kids something to look forward to, some sort of ritual every day that they know they're walking into that's going to maximize the positive in their day. Because that's what we're there for. We're there to hold them accountable, and we're there to set expectations that they can meet both academically and socially. But give them something they can count on every day. And it also helps you, too, to know that smile that you see creep across their face from what you do for them is a representation of how hard you work.
Absolutely. Don't let that external pressure, because it definitely happens. We sit in meetings. They kind of probe the idea of data, and absolutely data is important. But I know I've mentioned it before. I'd much rather have kids that are willing to, we've built the relationship that they're willing to run through walls if I ask them to, because they want to make me proud. Because again, it's all about that relationship. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, I know for 2 hours, you're going to give it your all, and then we're going to make up for it afterwards. So instruction is important, don't get me wrong. Trying to get your content in and laying it out so that it works right now, right about now, backwards mapping is really helpful. Hey, I know this is where I want to have my assessment done, so how many lessons do I have between now and then? Of course, then you have a snow day that messes it up, but build some buffer. But that is a really helpful tactic of, I want to assess on this day, how do I provide enough instruction to get it prepared.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, as always, keep driving, keep rolling. Love what you do. You can catch us on Twitter. You can always reach out to us on there with any kind of questions. Why can't I remember my tag right now? It's at A Price.
S-D-O-L. Oh, okay.
S-D-O-L, yeah. I drew a blank for a second.
Oh,
A Price S-D-O-L.
All right, and mine's EdTech Neighbor, playing off the Mr. Rogers joke. Real quick, before we sign off, I want to do some news for the podcast. Our good friend Ken Ehrman, who was one of the top 12 state up for Educator of the Year, unfortunately did not take home the award. While he was upset, I think that he was a little relieved. There's a lot of additional work that comes along with it, so... it is pretty cool to see him. We got to watch him live stream on stage and get to speak about the amazing things going on in his classroom. And much kudos for his hard work and mainly just broadcasting and letting people know the amazing things that go on in his classroom. I know he's been an inspiration to me and how to bring quality into my classroom every single day. So big kudos to him. Before we sign off, Mike, you have anything good you're looking forward to?
The Eagles, baby.
No, the Eagles. I was talking school-based. I got picked up for a really big conference I'm super excited for.
Great.
Called ISTE, which is the basis of a lot of technology standards. So Ryan, who did one of our episodes, and I have an extended session on STEM integration. So pretty excited. That happened since we last talked, and...
We are something exciting is happening at Price. We're doing a this weekend we have a staff restorative training. So Dean of Students Michelle Pletcher, who I would love to have on the show at some point, and myself are training staff once again in restorative practice a full day. We're doing it on Saturday, which is fantastic that we have staff
Wow.
that's that into what we're doing from like 8 to 2. We're going to be in there hitting it pretty hard, trying to figure out the avenues that we're taking and why restorative works. So, that's exciting for us.
Awesome. Well, we'll be in touch. I know we have, again, our goal is bringing some amazing guests and man, we've done it.
We've had
some amazing people on. So
6 for 6, sir.
We've got some pressure going forward. So hopefully everyone has a great week or so. We'll probably touch in a little bit later this month.
And if there's ever anybody that you are interested in hearing, someone that you've heard of, know about, let us know and we'll reach out. I mean, we'll never say no to trying to get somebody on board to talk to us about their beliefs and their philosophies.
Absolutely.
All right. So, hey, man.
Hey, buddy.
I'll talk to you.
Sounds good. See
y'all. We'll see you guys. Thanks.